This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Primal Potential podcast. I feel like I've been away for so long, but I know I haven't been away at all. I've recorded so many podcasts in the last few months. Oh, what a whirlwind. But this is real time. I am recording this on St. Patrick's Day, Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. And I've been looking forward to recording this episode for quite some time. As many of you know, especially those of you who follow me on Instagram, you can find me there at Elizabeth Benton or on Facebook, Primal Potential Podcast. You know that at long last, our daughter has joined us. She was born via emergency C-section, little spoiler, on Friday, March the 6th at 4:31 a.m. She is beautiful. Her name is Dagny Elizabeth Thompson, and we are all now home and getting better. I wanted to share, for those of you who are interested, the story of how she came into this world. And for those of you who are maybe new to the podcast, you can just go right ahead and skip this episode because this is not the normal content of the show. But I've been getting lots of questions about my experience and her birth and if it was what we thought that it would be and how we're doing and all sorts of different things. So I figured that the best way to share this with everybody and kind of memorialize it for myself is to put it out there on the podcast. So again, if you are new, welcome. Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I just had a baby. This show is not about my baby, but wanted to take a few minutes today to share the crazy story of her birth. And it's funny because most of you know she was born in March, but she was due in February. And when the calendar changed over from February to March, one of my first thoughts was the adage about spring and March, you know, comes in like a lion, goes out like a lamb, and Primal Potential's logo is the lion. And we always knew through this pregnancy that our girl was a stubborn one for sure. And so she came in like a lion. And I think we all can agree that the month of March kind of came in like a lion, not from a weather standpoint, but holy Toledo life circumstances. I went into the hospital with a world one way and came out of the hospital with the world looking quite different, having nothing to do with having a baby, but just everything with all of this coronavirus and all of that kind of stuff. So before we dive into this story, I'll just say again, just to cover my own butt and not confuse people, if you're new to the show, don't start with this episode, please. This episode is just for me to share with you guys this story of how our sweet girl came into the world. Also want to let you know that registration is open for our spring 12 weeks to transformation. It is open now. We kick off so soon. We kick off on Sunday, March 29th. And honestly, you know, the whole crux of the 12 weeks to transformation is creating change in your life by becoming a better thinker. And the reason we do it that way is because when we just try approach after approach, strategy, plan, protocol, system, you name it, we carry with us the barriers that screwed up the last time we tried, right? So whether that is excuses or doubts or fears or past patterns, if we do not tackle those head on, we're going to get the same results because no matter the plan or the protocol or the strategy, we are going to run into the same barriers. In the 12 weeks to transformation, we tackle those things. We need to clear them out of the way. We need to think about them differently. We need to elevate the way we think. And this is really a great time for that because whether it's something like coronavirus or it's getting laid off or it's a health scare, there are going to be reasons to sit on the sidelines and freak out for the rest of your life. And this is such a perfect time to say, no, I choose a different pattern. I choose that this is the time to invest in myself. And I would love to do that with you. I'd love to talk to you about what the 12 weeks to transformation looks like and what you can expect and all of those things. So all you got to do is go to primalpotential.com/transform. primalpotential.com/transform to learn more, to register. If you've got any questions, reach out. You can DM me on Instagram. You can message me on Facebook. You can email me directly, but do not wait. I'd love to do this with you. And for those of you who are wondering where the baby is, I am in the office, which is outside of the house on the property, and baby had just fallen asleep after nursing. She's inside with her daddy right now in a cute little St. Patrick's Day dress. I'll try to put that up on the show notes. You know what? There's probably not going to be show notes for today's episode. Or maybe there are, but it might take a day or two to get them up because I do want to get this episode out. So screw the show notes. If you want to see pictures, I've been sharing them on my Instagram stories at Elizabeth Benton. All right. Again, this is your first episode. See you later. Go choose a different one because you're going to be like, what is this about? Just me and my kid. All right. Baby was due in February, and I had a strong sense that she would be born in February, and yet nothing was really happening. As we got closer to my due date, we were trying everything, you name it, spicy food, exercise, walking, sex, everything, dates, red raspberry leaf tea, evening primrose oil, if you can name it, we basically tried it. And appointment after appointment, there was no progress being made. So no dilation, no effacement, no nothing. And let's see, it must have been the second appointment after my due date had come and gone. So we were about at 41 weeks. I expressed that I just had, I don't even know how to describe it. I had a weird feeling about going too far past my due date. They were willing because I didn't have any complications other than the fact that, you know, AMA, I'm advanced maternal age. I'm 36 turning 37, otherwise known as a geriatric pregnancy. But otherwise, you know, I felt there were no complications or any reasons that they wouldn't let me go to 42 weeks. What they had been planning to do at that point was have me get to 42 weeks and then schedule the induction. So it would be 42 weeks comes, we schedule the induction for a handful of days later, and then the process of induction would take a few days. My preference was, of course, to go into labor naturally and avoid induction. And at the same time, there was just something that felt really not good in my heart and in my head about going so far. And of course, while there are risks to induction, there are also risks to going beyond your due date. I can't explain it. It was just a feeling. And my pregnancy had been generally pretty healthy. The biggest challenge that I had was insomnia. I had pretty extreme insomnia for about 5 months and a lot of water retention, but then just the normal stuff, cravings and aversions and all of that kind of stuff. Baby's growth had been good. My blood pressure had been good. Everything had been good. And yet my body wasn't responding to the nearing of my due date, the passing of my due date. And I know it's all estimates, definitely not looking for all the thoughts on due dates and all of that kind of stuff. No matter what we tried, my body wasn't responding. And at that point, I was seeing the doctor at least twice a week because I was past my due date and also because AMA, advanced maternal age. At that point, they were just saying every single day, like, no change, no change at all. So when I went into that appointment around 41 weeks, it was just before that, just a couple days before that, they said to me before I left, and I expressed my, I just had this weird uneasy feeling that I couldn't really name or pinpoint. They said a midwife will call you regarding options for outpatient cervical ripening. So not, you know, induction with Pitocin or anything, but they're just going to call and talk to you about options for softening your cervix with medication. So I was like, okay, I wasn't really happy with that answer. And I really wanted things to happen naturally. But, you know, we went home, waited for the phone to ring, got a call probably around 4 p.m. And this was on Tuesday of the week she was born. So everything's kind of a blur right now. Let's see what that date would have been, because the timing here, begins to matter. So that would have been on Tuesday, March the 3rd. Got a call close to the end of the workday, and the midwife was supposed to call to talk to us about options for cervical ripening, but that's not how the call went at all. Essentially, this wasn't a midwife I had ever seen before, so she had never examined me. But looking at my chart, she said, you've now had two doctors document that your cervix is highly unfavorable. Your body is not ready. It's premature to talk about options. Just wait until you get to 42 weeks. To which I said, it's never too early to talk about options. I could be not even pregnant and we could talk about options. We're just talking, right? I mean, like, we could talk about burial options right now. Just because I'm not dead, it's not premature. But she wouldn't have the conversation with me. And she said, listen, if you decide to be induced in any way, shape, or form, you are just asking to lock yourself inside of a room and stare at four white walls for 5 days. And I was like, okay, that's kind of a gross exaggeration, because could an induction take 5 days? Sure. Do most inductions take 5 days? No, especially not when somebody is already beyond their due date. So the conversation was just not really productive. And Chris was in the room. I had the call on speakerphone. And we were both like, "What? Nobody has ever made us feel like my body wasn't ready or anything like that. Where is all this coming from, especially from somebody who hasn't seen me?" So essentially what I decided was, I'm going to call the office in the morning, which would have been Wednesday morning the 4th, and just ask to speak to my doctor and relay what was said from the midwife to the doctor and just see what her sense is, okay? So I got ready to go to bed that night, Tuesday the 3rd, and while I've had really bad insomnia that night, I didn't sleep at all. So typically I would sleep for anywhere from 20 minutes to 90 minutes a night. That had kind of been a pattern for months, and that night I didn't sleep at all. Not because I was like stressed or anxious, I just really didn't feel well. I got a very bad headache, and I'm not a headache person, and I felt kind of low-grade nausea. And around 6 o'clock in the morning, I woke Chris up and just said, I literally didn't sleep for a minute and I feel really sick. And he felt my forehead and I felt a little bit warm. Funny, we couldn't get the baby thermometer to work. Like, it's one of those temporal and ear thermometers, and he's reading the instructions. And when we kind of figured out how to make it work, we were borderline fever, but like, not really. I don't even remember what it was. But it was cool because the plan was for me to call anyway that morning and speak to my doctor. So as soon as the office opened, I called. Maybe 10 or 15 minutes later, the doctor called me back. And I said, you know, kind of twofold right now. Number one, I wanted to tell you about this conversation. But number two, I really don't feel well. I just feel sick. Not like labor sick, but just sick. And I don't even think I said the word flu. I said, I think I have a low-grade fever, nausea, blah, blah, blah. So she decided to have me go into the hospital. And the plan was to be monitored for 1 hour and check my temp and all of those things and potentially start us on a cervical softening agent and then send us home after an hour of monitoring the baby. We went to the hospital. The hospital's about 30 minutes from here. And in fact, Chris was out with the dog and I was like, hey, we're leaving like in 15 minutes. I think we actually had 10 minutes. I said, I'm going to jump in the shower. We got to leave in 10 minutes. They have a bed for us to just be monitored for an hour. And so we just went and left and didn't bring anything with us. The dog was in the crate. I think I had my computer and my phone charger and stuff in case I, you know, wanted to do some work for that hour. And as soon as we got settled in the room and they checked my vitals and everything, they said, you're here, like you're staying. And we were both, and I don't think Chris was even really paying attention, but I remember being like, wait, we're here, we're staying. Like, so we're not going home in an hour. And they said, you're not going home until the baby's born. And I'm like, okay, did something change? Like, am I all of a sudden dilated, effaced, all those things I need to be that I'm not? And essentially, it was a concern about the temperature, and they wanted to put me on IV fluids. And since they were going to put me on IV fluids, we were basically going to stay. And at that point, it became like, oh, right, so we've got to figure out the dog. We've got to like get my stuff here. I didn't have anything with me. Neither did Chris. And but we were like, okay, cool. Well, they were going to try to place at that point a balloon catheter, and that was going to take several hours. So I essentially said to Chris, you know, stay here while they place the catheter, and then you can go home, get everything we need, get the dog situated, all that. I let my mom know, we're not staying here for an hour. We're staying here until the baby's born. So a balloon catheter, and for some of you guys, this might be old news. I had never experienced this before, of course. A balloon catheter basically means they put two balloons inside you. One balloon is placed and then inflated between your cervix and your uterus, okay? And then the other balloon is placed and then inflated in your vagina. The plan was to insert these balloons to manually soften my cervix and just get my body ready because I had this low-grade fever. The first three times in a row that they attempted to place the catheter, it failed. And it failed because my cervix was too long. It hadn't started to shorten yet, so they weren't able to access what they wanted to access. And I will tell you right now that three attempts at that, I wanted to like crawl through the wall. And I remember them saying that I had done really well in the attempts because it's quite painful, but I was like, oh Jesus, like this is miserable, uncomfortable. Three failed attempts. And I didn't realize the first attempt had failed. So when she kind of stopped for a second, I just thought it was done until she said something along the lines of like, okay, let's try again. And I remember kind of sitting up a little bit, propping myself on my elbows and be like, what do you mean try again? Because whatever you just did, I don't ever want that to happen again. And she explained that it had failed and you're going to try again. And then the third time. And then after the third time, they said, okay, we can't do it right now. We're going to give you this oral cervical ripening agent to soften your cervix so that we can place the catheter. But we need to kind of get a jump start on things because you are showing signs of infection via the fever. So at that point, Chris decided to go home to get things squared away with the dog. Again, hospital's 30 minutes away, so he'd be gone for a few hours, most likely. And I just settled in on monitors, and everything was pretty okay. It still didn't feel very good, but I was relieved that baby was being monitored, and she was strong, and she was good, and everything was fine there. So 4 hours later, they decided to try again with the balloon catheter, and nobody was there at that point. Chris wasn't back yet, and I really wanted him there for just like the moral support, but we got it done. Fourth time's the charm. They were able to place that balloon catheter, which if you've ever had that before, one in your vagina, one between your uterus and your cervix, mighty uncomfortable. Mighty uncomfortable, but certainly bearable. And because I had been preparing for, you know, a vaginal birth and wanting to stay open to the option of a natural childbirth, I had been doing hypnobirthing for the last many, many months, which is just a lot of kind of, think of it as like very intensive meditation practice for pain management. And so that was really helpful in that I was getting really practiced and pretty good at just like breathing through things and not panicking and keeping my blood pressure down. So that was good. And fortunately, just after that balloon catheter was successfully placed, my mom arrived and I didn't know she was coming down. But once I told her, yeah, we're here, she decided to head on down at least for a little bit, which was good because it was definitely uncomfortable. And at that time, too, they decided to start me on Pitocin. And that decision was made. Pitocin kind of accelerates the laboring process and gets your body contracting. That decision was made because my fever was rising. And at this point, they had me on IV fluids and they also had me on Tylenol. And my fever was continuing to rise. So they felt like this urgency, like, let's move things along. Let's give your body a little bit of a push. And so with that came contractions. And I was very, very, very glad when Chris got back. I think we got to the hospital right before 10 o'clock in the morning, and all of this was just kind of happening back to back. Everything was accelerating pretty quickly, except my body wasn't making progress. With the balloon catheter, with the cervical softening agents, with the Pitocin, I was having physical symptoms. I was having contractions, and they were getting stronger. We could see that on the monitor, and I could certainly feel it, but my body wasn't responding to that, except for the fact that my fever was rising, and my fever was not responding to the IV fluids or to the Tylenol. So they came in and essentially said they wanted to put me on IV antibiotics. Now, those of you guys who have heard me talk about the importance of the microbiome have heard me talk about the fact that the microbiome work I've done in the last year is basically, in my opinion, the reason that I got pregnant. And I wanted to avoid antibiotics at all costs because it basically like just wipes out a huge part of your immune system. And when you deliver a baby vaginally, that is their exposure to the microbiome because inside your womb, the baby is totally sterile. So you want them to pass through the vaginal canal and be exposed to all of your, you know, healthy, rich, robust microbiome. And so if I'm laying here on IV antibiotics for a day or 2 days or God knows how long, having my microbiome essentially destroyed, then I'm starting her at a real deficit. And I didn't want to do that. Now, there was a backup plan that I had. And in my mind, what I have read about is that if for some reason you have to have like a C-section, then what you do is you swab your vagina before you deliver and you put it in a sealed container. And then after the baby is born, you wipe the baby down, vaginal swabbing, so that they can still get exposed to your microbiome. Unfortunately, at that point, because the balloon catheter had already been placed, I was bleeding reasonably heavily, to the point where it wasn't the same kind of option to do that swab at that point in time. So my pushback was not to prevent addressing any infection, but we hadn't proven at that point that it was a bacterial infection, right? It could have been a virus. So my recommendation to the doctor at that point, I said, I feel comfortable you running any tests. Let's see what we're talking about here before just going to the precautionary measure of IV antibiotics. So we did, oh my gosh, they were coming in, no joke, in 15-minute intervals to draw blood and do different blood tests. They did a nasal swab, which is really kind of a, that was not a good moment. The first time they came in for the nasal swab, which was supposedly to test for the flu, the swabs were so long and they had to go so far up my nose that I like seriously thought there was a chance of like brain damage. It was painful and it was uncomfortable and it was scary. And I remember kind of like, Chris had my left hand, but the nurse, when she kept going higher and higher, and then I realized she had to do both nostrils, I kind of like dug my fingernails into her hand. Poor thing. She was a sweetheart though. She was a trooper about it. Then like an hour later, she comes back in and says, you're going to hate me. I have to do that nasal swab again. And I'm like, why? And she said, because I accidentally used the swabs for the MRSA, test instead of, which is like a hospital acquired infection, instead of the flu. I was so pissed. I was so pissed. Like, are you kidding me? I'm laying here giving blood every 15 freaking minutes. And it wasn't through my IV. They were having to stick me every time and not in my good vein because my good vein was north of my IV. So they couldn't do any, finger pricks or any blood draws in my arm north of my IV. So they're doing my right hand, they're doing my right arm, they're doing feet. They're, you know, it was just constant, truly coming in every 15 minutes to do that. And they tested my urine and they had done the nasal swab. So yeah, I had to do two of the nasal swabs, but everything was coming back negative. And yet my fever wasn't responding to the Tylenol. So at that point, they basically said, there's millions of viruses. We can't possibly test for them all. we have to, for the sake of the baby, make an assumption that this is a bacterial infection, likely in your uterus or your placenta. We need to treat you with antibiotics before the baby is born. And then when the baby is born, we're going to take her to the NICU and get her on an IV of antibiotics. And I was just like, heartbroken by this. Of course, I wanted to be healthy myself. I wanted her to be healthy, but this like precautionary, we don't really know if it's bacterial, but we don't want to risk either one of you decision to put us both on IV antibiotics, which also meant that, you know, she couldn't come back to the room with us, or she couldn't stay in the room with us, or we couldn't do skin to skin right away. And all of those things being communicated while I'm having contractions, just not fun at all. But they decided, and I got placed on IV antibiotics. I believe there were 5 different antibiotics that they were running through different lines into my IV, and my fever still didn't come down. It was kind of fluctuating. Like it would maybe come down a half a degree and then it would go up a degree and then it would come down a degree and it would go up 2 degrees. And it was just this back and forth. And we were unable to sleep because between the monitoring of my temperature and my blood pressure and switching out IV bags and doing blood draws and monitoring baby's heart rate, there was just somebody in the room around the clock. And things got a little bit scary overnight that night, that Wednesday night, because baby's heart rate started to get too high. And they felt like it was related to the fever. And mom having a fever can really impact baby's stability, obviously. And what they expressed to me as well is that if I had any kind of infection in my body, that that can prevent my uterus from contracting the way that it needs to, which puts me not only at risk of not being able to have a vaginal delivery, but also puts me at risk of bleeding out. So we had a long conversation about my risk of hemorrhage, because in order for the bleeding to stop after childbirth, whether it's cesarean or it's vaginal, the uterus has to contract. That's how the bleeding stops. And with any kind of infection, that can be impaired. So that scared the crap out of me. And they decided to move me to NPO, or nothing by mouth. So no more water, no ice chips, no food, nothing, no clear liquids, nada, which sucked because I was so freaking thirsty, just so thirsty. And I was having contractions every 2 minutes. So I was hungry, you know, I was thirsty and I was hungry, and I knew that there was a long road ahead because I was still only 2 centimeters dilated and nothing was progressing me along. So I kind of had a little nervousness of like, how the heck am I going to have the energetic resources to get me through this? But that was the way that it was. And we decided at this point, it had to have been like Thursday morning. And I hadn't slept at all on Tuesday night, certainly hadn't slept at all Wednesday or Wednesday night in the hospital. They decided to give me some Ambien on Thursday morning to help me sleep. Didn't work. Partly it didn't work because the contractions were still pretty strong in every 2 minutes, and strong enough that, you know, I told Chris, you can't sleep right now. I need you right here kind of helping me through these. And also just because they were doing so much monitoring of my blood pressure and my temperature and my urine and my blood and baby, that there was no sleep. So what was happening with the fever at that point, I got to be able to predict it because I would start shaking violently. And that, I asked Chris like what some of the scariest parts were for him. And he said my like violent shaking was pretty terrifying for him. Typically, an hour before my fever would spike, I would begin to not just get the chills, but like my whole body would shake violently and I would have a hard time like even forming a full sentence. And my fever would be normal or the way it had been, slightly elevated at that time. But then an hour later, it would spike. So every time I would start to get these tremors, we would call the nurse in, and initially they'd be like, no, your fever's only, you know, 99.9. That's where it was before. And I was like, come back in an hour. Like, we know this pattern. It's going to go up. And it did. And it continued to go up. And at this point, you know, I'd been on antibiotics for many hours and it was still not responding. I wanted them to take me off the antibiotics because I said, hey, we're on all of these antibiotics. My fever is still not coming down, but they felt strongly that it could take up to 24 hours for your body to respond to the antibiotics. So we had to keep them going. At that point, I was on so many fluids. They did, after 24 hours, remove the balloon catheter because it could only stay in there for that long. And at some point, within maybe 5 or 6 hours after that, my water broke on its own. It was funny because Chris was talking to the nurse. I don't even know what they were talking about, but I remember they were both kind of leaning over my bed talking to each other. And I was like, sorry to jump in here, but I think my water just broke. I genuinely wasn't sure that is what had happened because I had been bleeding so much. So I had definitely been feeling that, but this was different. And they checked me, and sure enough, my water had broken. I got really hopeful that my body was now responding and that I was going to be able to kind of move along this labor process, because their primary goal, they were thinking at that point that this was still an infection in my uterus or my placenta or both, and that the only way to break the fever then is to deliver. So I was so encouraged. My water broke on its own. This is great. Things are going to start to move along. But they didn't. I was still at 2 centimeters, which was just really, really frustrating. I was about 80% effaced, but still between a 2 and a 3 centimeters and having contractions every 2 minutes without things moving along. Baby's heart rate was variable. It would just get really, really fast, and it would stay there for longer than they'd want. And then they'd come in and be like, oh, maybe we need to do something. But then it would go back to normal and they'd say, okay, we're just going to watch you for a little bit. On Thursday night, so Thursday night was, what, the 5th, around 11 p.m., my fever hit 103, and baby's heart rate was high, but they also knew that I hadn't slept in a couple of days at that point at all, so they decided to give me some morphine to see if I could sleep through the contractions and through the discomfort, because they felt like some sleep would give the baby rest, and because baby, through all my appointments over the last 9+ months, when I would sleep or be like really relaxed, she would relax as well. So I was 80% effaced. They decided to give me some morphine. Even though my fever was really high, they were still monitoring me constantly, but they really, really, really wanted me to be able to sleep a little bit. But that didn't really work. And just about 4 hours later, at 3:31 in the morning, they came in, checked my temp. It was 104. And within, gosh, I don't know, 90 seconds, the doctor was in the room saying, we're going right now for a C-section. And oh, I was terrified. And I think the reason I was most terrified was because they had talked to me about my risk of hemorrhage, and because my fever wasn't under control and I wasn't responding to anything and baby's heart rate was elevated, and I was legit scared. I texted my mom and I just said, 104 fever, C-section now. And then I said to Chris, call my mom. She was at a hotel just down the road from the hospital, as was my sister. And then I said, you know, tell your parents, who his parents live in Germany, and tell them to pray. And it was a scary few moments. And in hindsight, Chris and I hadn't decided on her name. We had decided on her name months and months and months ago. And then we started to be like, well, what about this? And we had 2 options. And one of the options was Dagny Elizabeth, but we were about 50-50 on the name. And as I signed all the consent forms and all of that seemed to happen so quickly, and they told me that, you know, they'd need to take her right away to give her IV antibiotics and all of that, they were wheeling me down the hallway and Chris was a couple steps behind, and then they gave him a second to say goodbye, and I could tell he was steady Eddie because he knew that I wasn't. But when he came to give me a kiss before I went into the OR, because they had to get me set up before he could come in prior to the start of surgery, and I said, "Her name's Dagny." And he just smiled and he said, "Okay," because for those of you who don't know, and there's an episode coming up about it, Dagny Taggart is one of the most brave, strong, classic female heroines in American literature from the book Atlas Shrugged. And as they wheeled me, I was like, this girl, she's got to be a strong fighter. She just has to be a strong fighter. So I decided in that moment, that's her name. And that's what Chris had really wanted all along. And I had two at the start, but I was the one that kind of second guessed it. So that decision was made in the hallway on the way to the operating room. And I hate needles, but of course I had like a bajillion needle sticks in the previous 48 hours or whatnot. So I was getting a little bit used to it, but I was not excited about the whole epidural thing and a needle going into my spine. There was just something that like really freaked me out about that. But we got through that, and a lot of women experience shakes and tremors when they're having C-sections or when they're under anesthesia for a number of reasons. I think mine were heightened because I had such a high fever at that point, and I had already been having these fever-associated tremors and shakes. So my arms were strapped down to kind of like, you know, the little arm pads off the side of the table, and I was shaking violently, so much so that my muscles began to cramp. My hands, my forearms, my biceps, my triceps, my jaw. I couldn't speak. Chris was trying so hard to understand me when they finally let him in before they took the baby out, because everything was cramping. And my blood pressure was also getting really high. But you're hearing all of this information, and the two things going through my mind are like, is the baby okay? And am I bleeding out? You know, like that's what I want to know. Is the baby okay? And am I bleeding out? I've heard so many stories about like, you're going to feel a lot of pressure and it's going to feel weird. And I don't really remember that much pressure or tugging or weirdness or anything like that. I just remember feeling like I was going to throw up, and they kept telling me like where to turn my head if I was going to throw up. And just the terrible discomfort of the shaking. And I was begging them to cover me with blankets, but they couldn't at that point. And we just soldiered through. And I said to Chris, I said, I need you to help me breathe, because my mouth was cramping so badly that I was really struggling to get a breath in. So he just locked eyes with me and counted every single breath, every second of every breath until it was over. Well, until actually when they got her out, he went with her. But that was intense and tough. And I think one of the scariest parts for him, for sure. It was very, very uncomfortable. But then, you know, we heard her cry, and it was just like one or two cries. She really didn't wail a lot. She didn't cry too much. They held her up for me to see her, but for whatever reason, I couldn't see her. I don't know if it was because of where they were holding her. I have no idea. I couldn't see her. Who knows? Maybe I was like half blacked out. But Chris went over to the incubator when they went to, you know, clean her off and take her weight and all that before trying to get an IV in her. And I was telling the anesthesiologist who was right at my head, I'm like, tell him to take a picture, because I couldn't speak loudly. And I was trying to make sure that he got pictures, and he brought a picture over to me before they could bring her over to me. And that was just really special and really nice. And they did bring her to me before they took her to get an IV antibiotic, which was really interesting because she was too small. They couldn't place the IV, which turned out to be an interesting turn of events. But yeah, she was 8 pounds, 9.8 ounces, and just perfect and beautiful and wonderful and strong and breathing well and all of those things, which was such a huge relief. I just wanted her with me. And I was really sad that that she couldn't be with me. But I also wanted to make sure that Chris got out to let my mom and my sister know that I was okay, because I know they were pretty terrified when they got that phone call that we were going into C-section with a 104 plus degree fever. So when I got back to the room, which seemed to take way too long, I was like, why is it taking so long to sew me up? And I just kept asking, like, am I bleeding out? Am I okay? And the doctors and the nurses were so wonderful and so helpful, especially after Chris left, because, you know, he had been so reassuring when he was there. When we got back to the room, my fever broke almost immediately. It seemed to me to be immediate, like within 5 minutes of getting back to the room, I was sweating profusely and, you know, teeth chattering, cold, but like fever breaking kind of thing. And everybody felt really encouraged by that because, okay, this confirms it. It was an infection in your uterus or your placenta, because now that you've delivered, the fever is breaking. Didn't quite turn out to be that simple, but, they were unable to place the IV with baby. So what they decided to do was do some testing on my uterus and my placenta to see, is there some sort of bacterial overgrowth here? And then if there was, they would do a bolus, like a one-time injection of antibiotics into the baby. And that would kind of buy us a little bit more time to get some more answers before making a call about her. So the challenge that we had was that my blood pressure had dropped after the C-section and stayed low. And so my fever was breaking, but my blood pressure was like 80 over 55. And babies, infants, don't fever the same way that adults do. So whereas adults, their temperature will go up, a baby demonstrates fever, specifically a newborn demonstrates fever, by not being able to maintain their body temperature. So we were told that we could not put the baby in the bassinet for at least the first 24 hours. We had to be doing skin to skin, which I was a little worried about because I was sweating and breaking a fever. And I was concerned that me being wet would just make her colder. So Chris and I were kind of passing off back and forth to try to keep her warm, which meant no sleep, right? Just more time of no sleep, especially because they were monitoring us. I was still on the antibiotics, still having constant blood cultures, white blood count, complete blood count, all of that kind of stuff they were doing over and over and over and over, swapping out my IVs, keeping me on fluids, all of that kind of stuff. Baby seemed to be good though. I mean, other than the fact that her temperature was too low and they were all over that, it was good. They didn't want to put her under lights. A lot of you are thinking like, well, why didn't they just put her in a warmer? Because it would mask the problem. She would artificially warm up, but we wouldn't really know if she was developing the ability to maintain her body temperature. And I'm really grateful for that, that they didn't want to just treat the symptom. They really wanted to see what was going on and not mask it. So that was really cool. Unfortunately, my fever continued to ebb and flow. It would do this spiking thing after tremors and shakes at night, and then it would spike, and then a few hours later, it would come back down. Baby seemed to be much more quick to regulate her body temperature. I would say 36 to 48 hours in, she was maintaining her body temperature in a much more acceptable range, but I was still having a lot of trouble with fever. And then on top of it, with recovery. And, you know, they wanted me to be up, but what would happen is when I would get out of bed, I would get those tremors, my fever would spike. It was tough. It was rocky, but we had really wonderful care, and it's what kept us in the hospital a lot longer than we thought we would be there. We were in the hospital for a full week. We really thought we'd be there for a couple of days, as is the norm if you go into labor and have a vaginal delivery. But yeah, we had seven long days in the hospital before we went home. And even the day before we went home, I still had a low-grade fever. And this is at the same time that the world is blowing up with all of this like coronavirus stuff too. So we were sent home with instructions to really pay close attention to my temperature, to really allow me to heal and rest and recovery, to pay close attention to baby's temperature. She definitely has lost more weight than they would like to see. But part of that is expected because of the volume of fluids that I was on and how sick I was. So we do go back to her pediatrician tomorrow as of when I'm recording this. And we are just like really, really storming heaven that she has begun to put some weight on. She's an okay eater. She's a finicky eater. She's a great sleeper. She's kind of an okay eater. So our focus is on my physical recovery. We still don't yet have results of the testing of my placenta and my uterus in terms of like, was there a bacterial infection there or was there not? That can take 2 weeks. And we're still several days away from the 2 week mark from when she was born. So we are just taking it day by day. I will tell you, it was like trial by fire when we got home. Our first night home, baby turned blue, stopped breathing, scared the shit out of us. I asked Chris, of all the things that happened, what was the hardest for you? And he said, her not breathing when we were home, because we were home, right? I mean, everything that happened in the hospital, we had really great care. We always felt supported. When it was just us, fortunately, my mom was there too. It was pretty terrifying for that to happen. I developed a extreme full body rash, which I hear isn't totally abnormal, but it usually happens before a baby's born and it usually resolves when a baby's born. Mine developed afterwards, and it was just everything except my face, from the bottoms of my feet to just above my breasts, full body, super, super itchy. It's definitely getting better now, but it is still there and not super comfortable. We're watching my fever. I've had some of the chills, but not nearly as extreme. So I think I'm like on a slow road to recovery there. And because I'm off the antibiotics now, we are really, really, really prioritizing probiotics, immune supplements, quality nutrition, obviously trying to sleep, which isn't super, super easy with a newborn, but we are really prioritizing that. And just soaking in every second with our girl. I cannot possibly say enough about how supportive Chris has been through all of this. So to anybody out there who is listening, who is a single mom or who has had a baby, you know, with somebody overseas or just not having the support that you want, like you are a hero, a champion, all of the things, because there are so many moments where I just had this, the deepest sense of gratitude. Like I don't know how I would have gotten through it all without him. Even every day now, you know, from like, hey, I need more water, to can you change your diaper, or any number of things. And certainly helping me breathe during the C-section and holding my hand during all of the contractions and listening to me cry over any number of things. Oh gosh, the number of tears shed over the last 10 days have been innumerable for sure. But I also felt all of the love and support and prayers of you guys. And we just feel so blessed with our perfect girl. And certainly an experience that is not what we expected, but I think it brought us so much closer together. I know it certainly brought me closer to my sister and closer to my mom, who were like my ride or die angels every second of the way. Oh my goodness, completely just couldn't have done it without them. The adventure begins. I know that this is only the beginning, and we're super, super happy to be home. I've gotten a lot of questions about like, what was the hardest part? Or, you know, how are you doing now? And I first want to say, like, I'm doing well. I'm getting better every day. I certainly didn't expect to get really sick and be in labor for 2 days and then go through surgery and then still be sick while taking care of a newborn and adjusting to all of that. That was not at all how I would have scripted this to go. But I feel physically better every single day. And emotionally, it's a roller coaster. You know, it's a roller coaster of like just deep, deep gratitude. It's a roller coaster of love and joy. It's a roller coaster of fear and worry and all of those things as all this craziness happens in the world. The hardest part probably wasn't the physical pain, though that was legit hard. And like, if I could do 100 million commercials a day for meditation, I would, because that got me through it. And has also gotten me through a lot of the like hard pain moments in recovering from abdominal surgery, you know? But the combination of emotion, hormone, sleep deprivation, fear, all of those kinds of things, it just makes for a perfect storm that you just can't prepare for. You just, it's kind of like getting caught up in a huge wave. There's nothing you can do to control the wave. You just have to ride it out. You just have to ride it out and wait for the next one. And that is very much kind of where we are at right now. I will say that I learned a lot about sensitivity to situations through all of this, because like the first couple days in the hospital before she was born, so many people were messaging me and saying things like, is she here yet? Or she'll come when she's ready. And I know I've said those things to people and I think they're so well intended. But what I learned is, for me, I'll never say them to somebody again. I'll say, how are you? Do you need anything? How can I pray for you? But when you're physically in distress, emotionally or health-wise, and somebody says something like, she'll be here when she's ready, and you know full well that your body is fighting to keep you well and fighting to keep your baby alive, like it just, it feels not good, you know? Or is the baby here yet? Or did I miss the announcement? And you know that you're in distress and you don't know how things are going to turn out. And surely it's a very different situation when it's like your immediate friends and family members. You know, my family was in the loop, and so they were asking, you know, questions that where they had context. But the number of like Instagram DMs and things like that where people were like, did I miss the announcement? She'll come when she's ready. Is she here yet? And I'm in a fearful place, or I'm in a really uncertain place, or a place of pain and all of those things, it just didn't feel good. So I know for me, the comments that I'll have for people who are pregnant moving forward are just like, how are you? Do you need anything? How can I pray for you? Because everything else, you know, you just can't help but think like, you never know if you're asking that question to somebody who just lost their baby or who, you know, is fighting tooth and nail to save their baby's life or to save their own life. And I was really grateful for that lesson in compassion, because at times it really was hurtful for me to see questions and comments that were very well intended. And I just am choosing to see that as a lesson of how I want to support people moving forward. But otherwise, it's one of those things where time, I think, softens a lot of the hard edges of the experience, because it was terrifying. I've never had a fever that high in my whole life. Never mind having a fever that high that continues to rise when you're in the hospital being treated and not responding, and you're in labor and you're sleep deprived and you don't know how it's impacting your baby, you know? It was a lot, but here we are with our healthy baby girl. Dagny Elizabeth is inside with her daddy right now, and I can't wait to get back in there. So I just wanted to share this with you guys. You have been so wonderful to be checking in on me and asking questions, and I just wanted to share our very unexpected birth story with you. If you want to see pictures of the baby, I have been sharing them on my Instagram stories, not to be confused with my Instagram feed. You can find me there at Elizabeth Benton. Also want to remind you guys that on March 29th, we kick off our next 12 weeks to transformation. So if you are ready to elevate your thinking, if you are ready to change your life, if you are ready to step beyond the excuses and the past patterns and the same old results you've always gotten, do not hesitate to reach out if you want to learn more. You can go directly to primalpotential.com/transform. You can also message me. I'd love to talk to you about it so you don't miss out on this opportunity if it's a good one for you. Take care, everybody. Have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to the Primal Potential podcast, where our goal is not to help you learn. Our goal is to help you change. This is a year of action. Take something you learned from this episode and put it into action in your life today. To learn more about working more closely with me and the Primal Potential team, please visit primalpotential.com/transform.